Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale. Frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to Hour 2. Time for Toker Talk Radio. Pay no attention to the intro because our phone line is down at this point. You can't call in. I got to get that fixed. So much to do, so little time. Beautiful day here in legal potland. And I'm sure hoping that so many more states get to be legal here coming in 2016. I've been on the horn with the folks at Cannabis Radio, and we're preparing our marijuana election night coverage. All sorts of possibilities here. We might even be hooking up, cross your fingers, with one of the major cable news outlets and providing marijuana information for them. So wouldn't that be fun? We shall see what happens. Also, want to make a shout out for the Indo Expo. Indo Expo is taking place first weekend of August here in Portland, and Cannabis Radio is going to have a major display there. We'll be bringing live coverage from Indo Expo, so make sure you stop by our huge 20 by 30 booth and say hi if you're in the Portland area. But as I was saying, I really want more legal states, and we're all excited about the marijuana election night because we could have 9 or 10 different states voting. On legalization, we've already got a guarantee. California, Nevada, and Maine are on the ballot. Arizona is going to be on the ballot. They're on the ballot, but there's this legal challenge right now that they still got to get passed. I think they will. And then Massachusetts is on the ballot as question 4. And that's the one we're worried about, because if you caught the first hour in our headlines, this new poll is out on Massachusetts, where the voters there, 51% are against question 4. 51% against legalization in Massachusetts. Normally, when you start these ballot initiatives, you want to be in the 60% positive range. You want to have 60% support, because as the campaign goes on, you lose some of your support. So for Massachusetts to be at 41% support right now does not bode well for them passing legalization. And I'm kind of surprised, because in the last two presidential elections, 2008 and 2012, they voted on marijuana policy. They passed decrim by over 60%. They passed medical by over 60%. It's just weird, isn't it, that legalization is a bridge too far for some people. It's like, all right, we won't lock you in jail. All right, we'll let you have medical dispensaries. But nope, we can't let you stop buying your weed in the park from some guy. That's the thing that frustrates me the most. It's like these people that don't want legalization because they don't want the pot shops. They're worried about the pot shops, or they're worried about the edibles, or whatever excuse they make, fail to recognize how that already exists. It's just existing on a black market, benefiting criminals. Anyway,
good luck to the folks in Massachusetts. We'll be out there for Boston Freedom Rally in September, and let's hope that some education happens. Part of the problem they got here is they've got some pretty strong opposition that's raised a pretty decent amount of money, and it's headed by the governor, Charlie Baker, out there, who is incredibly popular, which is weird. Massachusetts, you think of as a blue state, you know, Taxachusetts, but they got this Republican governor, and he's over 60% approval ratings. He's got the highest approval ratings of any governor in the United States. And he's come out vocally against Question 4, as has the Speaker of the House and the Mayor of Boston. So I don't know what it's going to take to get Massachusetts over the hump. But let's hope it happens. I don't want to see a loss on Election Day. Be back with San Ho Tree versus Kevin Sabet right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Next to THC and CBD, you can now add CBR to your cannabis vernacular. CBR as in CannabisRadio.com.
Cash?
Sorry.
I don't carry around cash, and I don't want to use the ATM and pay surcharges.
You don't need to carry cash. Haven't you heard about PayQuick?
Okay, tell me about PayQuick.
It's the safe and easy way to pay. It works just like your debit card to securely pay for your purchase, and gives you rewards points every time you use it.
Nice.
PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQwick.com.
Fortunate to have Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley. Your signature top 10 song, One Toke Over the Line. I've read a couple different versions of what the tune's origins are. What's the true story?
We were playing a little club in Kansas City. A friend stopped by with some really good hash. We stepped out back and came back in. We're tuning up in the dressing room, and Tom said, man, I'm really one toke over the line. And I just cracked up. I thought it was hysterical. We literally wrote that song just entertaining ourselves and to make our friends laugh. Sitting downtown in a railway
station, one toke over the line. It's time to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Your grapefruits are no match for my Trump Towers.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit neweracpas.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the new era.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Like I said, we're looking forward to Marijuana Election Night 2016 coming up November 8th. We're going to have reporters from all over the country in each state that is voting on marijuana to bring us the election returns as they come in. And if I have to, you know, bring out my crystal ball, still here in the middle of July, long time before the election, but if I have to predict how this is going to go down, I'll make some predictions. So for legalization, we got California. It's on the ballot. I think it passes. I cannot see Prop 64 not passing in California. California will legalize marijuana. We've got Arizona, which has this, you know, it's got enough signatures for the ballot for sure. And I think they even have an initiative number now. But there's this legal challenge that's got to be heard on August 12th as to whether or not the 100-word summary was misleading. It's a Hail Mary pass. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. So Arizona is going to be on the ballot. Does Arizona pass, though? And I'm not so sure about Arizona passing. It only passed medical marijuana by 50.13%. And it's got a very vocal anti-marijuana campaign from both sides. It's got coming from the right with the Maricopa and Yavapai County attorneys and this whole sensible Arizona, whatever the hell it is, opposing it. And then from the left, you've got Jason Medar and the whole Arizonans for Mindful Reform, pot smokers, stoners against legalization who are attacking the initiative. So it's getting attacked on both sides. And it's already kind of a conservative-leaning state. So does legalization pass in Arizona? I'm going to give this a 50-50. It's a coin flip. It's going to be close, folks. Next door, Nevada has marijuana legalization on the ballot. I think this one's a pretty lead pipe cinch, too. Not as strongly as California, but I'm pretty sure Nevada's going to pass legalization. So for the West, I can see California and Nevada passing, Arizona maybe. Now, as we move back east, we've got Maine and Massachusetts. Maine, I'm going to put at the same level, maybe one notch higher than Arizona. Where Arizona, I'm giving it a 50-50, I'd give Maine a 51-49. I think it's going to be close in Maine as well. Then Massachusetts. As that poll came out, it said only 41% support in Massachusetts. And if you forced me to take a bet on this, I would have to bet against it passing. An initiative going in at this point with 41%, that does not bode well. That is some really bad news. So if I have to rank them in order, it's California, pass. Nevada, pretty sure to pass. Maine, likely to pass. Arizona, coin flip. Massachusetts, probably not when it comes to the legal states. So we could go anywhere from two out of five to four out of five, I think. I think getting all five is not going to happen. Then let's take a look at the medical states. We got Florida, Arkansas, Missouri, Montana, and possibly North Dakota. They're all in varying states right now. Florida and Arkansas are on the ballot. And Florida is a constitutional amendment that's going to require 60% of the vote. And they tried in 2014 and they got 58% of the vote. And that was after a heavy anti-campaign, the biggest spending on anti-marijuana campaign so far. Sheldon Adelson was a big part of that. But that was an off-year election. In the 2016 presidential election, the natural support for marijuana should be more likely. There should be a greater poll turnout amongst the demographics that are going to support us. But 60% is still a high number to have to pass. And there's going to be more money coming in against this, just like there was before. And now they can use, the opponents can use the excuse that they have this law, the CBD law for the epileptic kids, and this let them try law, which is this new law that was passed that said terminal patients can try experimental drugs, and they're going to include high THC cannabis with that. But you have to be terminally ill. Basically, the law is, well, you're going to die, so why not let you try something? But they'll be able to use those two laws to say, hey, look, we did something for the sickest and most disabled. Whether or not that works, I don't know. I would give Florida, I think it's likely to pass. I think they're likely to get 61, 62%, but it's going to be close. Arkansas, I see is more likely to fail than likely to pass. Arkansas tried a medical marijuana initiative back in 2012, and it got 48% of the vote. This initiative it's a really good initiative. If it passes, it's going to be the most wide open medical marijuana initiative to pass since at least Michigan in 2008. With that said, I think that could be a hang up for getting it passed in that state, just because the first southern state to pass a comprehensive medical marijuana after Florida, I think, would have to be a little more restrained. So we shall see. Missouri is still fighting its way to make the ballot. I think in Missouri, the chances are a little bit better than they are in Arkansas, but both states are southern kind of states, and it's going to be tough to pass anything there. Then as we look at Montana, Montana is an interesting case because Montana is going to have a initiative. It's made the ballot, the initiative to restore their medical marijuana program. And then there's going to be another initiative that's likely to make the ballot to absolutely repeal
their medical marijuana program. No medical marijuana whatsoever. The chances of how this goes is hard to say. I don't think the initiative to repeal will pass. I think there's enough people who appreciate that, yes, truly sick people need medical marijuana, that I don't think they can pass that one. I think the general feeling in Montana among lawmakers, law enforcement, and some of the public is that medical marijuana was a good thing, but it got abused, it got taken advantage of. And that's why they supported the 2011 bill to restrict the program. And when there was a veto referendum on it, they supported the law 57%. So I don't think the repeal can pass. But can the medical marijuana restoration pass? That's going to be tough because you're asking people to go back to the way medical marijuana was when it was demonized and there were so many patients and out-of-state plates at the dispensaries and the all of the things that gave it a black eye in the first place. I will say this. I think the restoration will do better than the repeal. The question is, can the restoration break 50%? I hope it can. And finally, North Dakota. North Dakota is, I don't think it's likely to make the ballot. They turned in about 17,500 signatures. They needed about 13,500 signatures. So they're going to have like 74-76% validity rate for their signatures. And that's a hard, hard target to hit. But if they do hit that target and medical marijuana makes the ballot in North Dakota, could it pass? Boy, hard to say. I think it's more likely not to pass in North Dakota. But, you know, it's a 2016 election. Who knows what could happen? Everything's up for grabs. We'll be covering it all here on Marijuana Election Night on CannabisRadio.com. It'll be my fifth straight election covering covering the nation, basically. We started in 2010. I covered Prop 19 from Oaksterdam in Oakland, California, as it lost. Then in 2012, we had coverage from all three states, from Oregon, Washington, and Colorado. I was in Washington with the I-502 people. Kerry Gallagher, Cannabis Kerry, was in Denver with the Amendment 64. And Jennifer Alexander and Iva Cunningham did the coverage from Portland, Oregon, as we lost in 2012. For 2014, we had coverage in all four of the states that were voting. Both of the states that were voting, Oregon and Alaska, voting for legalization. And we covered some of the other states that had various initiatives going on. In 2015, I was in Columbus, Ohio, for the ill-fated Issue 3 campaign. And this year, I'm not sure where I will be broadcasting from. I think I'm going to be in California. I think Cannabis Radio will probably get ourselves set up at Oaksterdam or someplace in California to cover the election. But we are going to have reporters from all of these states, up to possibly 10 states. And I've got it covered for California and Arizona and probably Massachusetts. But if you know people in some of those other states, I think I can get Arkansas and Missouri as well, and Florida. But if you know anybody in Maine, Montana, or North Dakota that would like to help us cover this election from that state, especially North Dakota. I don't know who I'm going to find in North Dakota. I don't know any North Dakota activists. But if you know someone or you can help me spread the word, you got some relatives or somebody up there who wouldn't mind being on the phone and holding on the line for me to help report from those areas. We're even looking at getting some massive sponsorship for this event, and we may be able to pay our reporters. I can't guarantee anything yet, but we are working on that angle because it is hard work. And we will be covering from the East Coast polls all the way through the West Coast. So Maine and Massachusetts will be voting first. I think their polls close 8 p.m. Eastern. It would be 5 p.m. Pacific. So we'll just do the Russ Belville show. We'll lead into Marijuana Election Night. We'll cover it until they're finally closed all the way on the West Coast. So enjoy that. That's coming up November 8th this year.
We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
All right, that's 4:20 out here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take a break for our union-mandated safety briefing. We always want to make sure that we're ultra safe. And one of the best ways you can be safe when it comes to marijuana is legalizing it so that it's labeled and inspected and you know exactly what you're getting. Take a break. We're back with San Ho Tree versus Kevin Sabet right after this.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
Oh, let the marijuana llama tell you something now. About a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot proved by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
It's time for cannabis facts about teen drug use from Robert Platchhorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
Get the latest updates on The Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking The Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
And blue blasting gurgan, fuffin' der blasting schnurb norbin. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hope you're feeling mellow. As we learned in hour one, smoking pot makes you mellow. Yes, scientists have confirmed. Smoking pot makes you mellow. Okay. I want to turn things over to somebody I admire and appreciate. I get to read his work online and see him at various activism events. His name's San Ho Tree, and he's one of these public policy gurus. And most recently, he was on a TRT World. I'm not sure what that stands for, but he was on TRT World, a program called Newsmakers. And he was in a debate with Kevin Sabet, the head of Project SAM, the nation's leading anti-marijuana legalization group. So I wanted to turn things over to San Ho here and hear a little bit of his debate with Kevin Sabet. Here we go.
The so-called war on drugs and whether drugs should be legalized. In New York is San Ho Tree. He's the director of the Drug Policy Project that's pushing to end the international war on drugs and replace it with new policies. Also in New York is Kevin Sabet. Kevin's director of the Drug Policy Institute and former senior advisor to the White House Office on National Drug Control Policy. Thanks, both of you, for joining us. Kevin Sabet, let's start with you. Was El Chapo's capture a victory in the war on drugs?
Well, look, he was the leader of one of the most violent and bloody syndicates this world has, you know, seen in modern times. So I think it's a good day when he's captured and justice will be done. I'm not under any illusion that, you know, by capturing him, we all of a sudden are going to stop drugs from flowing. There are other cartels and other people that will replace him. And this speaks to the complexity of this issue. We need really to, you know, get a change rule of law. We need to institute confidence in institutions so that people can actually get an education and have a real, you know, chance at a real job that can make them a living that's worth, you know, and that they can actually provide their for their family.
Would you like to fine-tune the current program?
Yeah, I think we need to absolutely fine-tune it, sometimes make some wholesale changes. I mean, the reason we've had prison swelling in the U.S. goes far beyond just drug crimes. So we've had things like, mandatory minimums for other crimes. We've had three strikes and you're out laws. And there are things that we can do to actually reduce incarceration and also reduce crime. So treating addiction as a disease and having, for example, specialized drug treatment courts that are, if they're done in the right way, with preserving human rights, but also preserving public safety and health could be one way to do it. We need to increase prevention and so because we know prevention is worth a pound of cure, an ounce of prevention.
I just wanted to pause this for some commentary because two things that Kevin Sabet will always come back to. And one is this idea that we need drug courts, that drug courts will help and that drug courts are part of the answer. And in a sense, you got to look at two sides of this coin. On the one side of the coin with the drug court, if you got someone that, let's say, they're addicted to heroin, they're living on the streets, they're breaking into cars to steal shit to pawn or to sell so they can get some more heroin, and you bust them for breaking into the cars, then yeah, let's take them to a drug court. Let's get them some help for their heroin addiction to get them off of this addiction that's forcing them to commit these crimes. Absolutely, I'm all for that. The problem is the other side of the coin, which is the guy that gets caught with a bag of weed, and that's it. That's the crime. That's it. That's the only crime that he's committed is getting caught with the bag of weed. The idea of the drug court is to take people who've committed actual crimes because of their addiction and help them by curing their addiction or treating their addiction. But when someone's busted with a bag of weed, there's no crime that we're having to remediate here. They're just caught with a bag of weed. And so we send them to a drug court and we say, okay, well, you're going to go to jail for this bag of weed, or you can go to this rehab where we piss test you. And if you pass that, then no problem. And gee, what do you think people are going to pick? And here's the problem with people picking that. Because if you do fail the pee test, and sometimes that can happen even though you've stopped smoking pot and you're obeying the rules, the way it's released in your system is variable, and you could actually have a positive test even though you've quit for a while. Well, if that happens, you're back in jail, and you're usually put into jail for a worse sentence than you would have got if you just pleaded guilty in the first place and had some sort of plea agreement. Right? So this is especially troublesome when we talk about the people addicted to meth and cocaine and heroin and alcohol who go through these drug courts, and relapse is a part of addiction. You know, that just happens sometimes for some of these people. And the cost of relapse is getting a far worse sentence than if they'd had just plea bargained in the first place. And when we look at the statistics, there's a stat the federal government keeps track of in a database called the Treatment Episode Data Set Admissions, TEDS-A. And when you take people and you look at the people who are in rehab with marijuana as their primary or sole substance, well over half those people that are in rehab are there because the criminal justice system forced them there. Well over half. And only about 15% are self-admitting. Only about 15% go, God, man, I got a real problem with weed. I need some rehab. So no wonder Kevin Sabet likes the drug courts, because his buddies in the treatment industry, many of whom who are on the board of Project Sam, love the idea of court-ordered rehab clients, people that have to be their customers. And it's especially a bonus because these pot smokers are great rehab customers. In the TEDS A database, we find the people who are in rehab for marijuana alone or as a primary substance, 36-7% of them didn't even smoke any marijuana in the month before they went to rehab. The judge says, all right, you know, court order, you're going to go to rehab, stop smoking pot. And they do. And another 17-18% of them only smoked pot once or twice a week, or once or twice a month, I should say, in the month before they went to rehab. So you have a situation here where over half the people in rehab for marijuana that were forced there, over half the people in rehab for marijuana, aren't even that addicted to it. They can quit it easily. So if you're a guy who owns a rehab, not only do you get these court-ordered clients coming to you, who, by the way, are just pot smokers, so a lot of them are still employed and have insurance and can pay for their rehab. But when it comes time to evaluate how well they did in the rehab, well, they're pot smokers and they quit. And it looks like, hey, look, your rehab worked. They came in as pot smokers, and after they left, they weren't smoking pot anymore. Well, yeah, because you were threatening them with a pee test that would send them to jail. So when it comes time to get your next grant, get your next contract, you can point to these statistics, say, hey, look how many people graduate our rehab, how well our rehab does. Those stats would be much worse if the only people in rehab were there for coke, meth, and heroin, and OxyContin and alcohol, because relapse is a big part of those drugs. So that's, I had to comment on that, because every time Kevin Sabet brings up drug courts, I know the public hears that and they think the frame of that seems like it's a compassionate frame. Rather than sending people to prison, we'll send them to a rehab without recognizing that it's really just a rent-seeking kind of gesture from the rehab community, especially when it comes to weed. And anyway, so that was, there's that. And then the other thing he brought up, Kevin Sabet brought up, was this idea of prevention. We need to have more prevention. Well, what does prevention mean to Kevin Sabet? Prevention means finding ways to stop people from smoking pot. And stop kids from smoking pot, for that matter. And how does he do that? Well, he's all for all of these brief interventions and treatments and restrictions. And, of course, not legalizing marijuana so people can get a hold of pot. Anyway, let's go back to the newsmakers on TRT World. We'll hear a rebuttal soon from San Jose.
And we also need to make sure that other countries, that of course their customs are respected and human rights, but that there are other opportunities for example, opium, you know, poppy farmers in Afghanistan or coca growers in Mexico. And that's only going to happen if we have a much more of a wide-scale change in democratic institutions and in making sure that law enforcement is actually, you know, doesn't get corrupted so that they're paid what they deserve, making sure teachers and healthcare systems are installed. Yeah.
Okay, let's get Sanho Tree. Sanho, all of that sounds quite reasonable, doesn't it?
Not only is this not going to reduce the amount of drugs coming into the United States, in fact, there was an internal Homeland Security study done by Customs and Border Protection in 2010 that looked at the impact of capturing high-level cartel leaders, and they said there's no discernible impact in the amount of drugs flowing in the United States. And in fact, I would go even further, that the decapitation strategy against cartels actually increases violence and has the potential of doing so tremendously. It creates a vacuum whereby the lieutenants of a cartel may strive to get into a power struggle to take it over, or rival cartels may sense weakness and then try to take over their turf. And so this bloody drug war that President Calderon, the previous president of Mexico, started unleashing in 2005 has killed well over 100,000 people now. And at the end of this bloody process, assuming it does end someday, the current turf wars that are going on, does anyone believe that drugs will stop flowing into the United States? And it hasn't. The first two times El Chapo was put in prison, it didn't impact the flow of drugs at all. So why do we think this is any different? But it has the potential of dramatically increasing violence, as we have seen in Mexico for the past decade now.
And Sanjo, looking a little bit deeper and further back, you want marijuana, heroin, cocaine? You want everything legalized?
I think, you know, certainly the cannabis trade should be legalized. We have experimented this with the United States. The results are very positive. The cocaine and heroin are more problematic drugs. It doesn't mean we need to criminalize them, however. There are heroin maintenance programs being tried around the world where you take that out of the hands of the black market and criminal enterprises. And this is only for people who have not been able to give up heroin or use methadone or other treatment modalities. These are the hardcore. And for them, they can get prescription heroin, which is much safer, and it doesn't involve the black market. It's the last step measure, but I think it's different. Yeah. So we have to stop thinking in terms of black and white, that it's either legal or illegal. Just because you decriminalize something or choose to regulate it doesn't mean you want to make it readily available for people to go sample and try. And so we have a false dichotomy being played here.
Okay, well, let's bring Kevin.
All right, so that's
Kevin,
where Kevin will want to get in. We're going to have to save that until we come back from the break. More from Sanjo Tree versus Kevin Sabet. But I'll just add this point. You know, they always try to get you, these media people, they try to get to that shocking question of, well, do you think all drugs should be legalized? And I'm in a position where I can say just flat out, yes. Yes, all drugs should be legal. And then I can follow that with, but legal is a spectrum that ranges from chocolate to morphine. Some drugs should be closer to chocolate. Other drugs should be closer to morphine. Stay tuned. We're back right after this. And don't forget, Stoner Jesus at 5.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary, CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Voober vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Voober vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Voober way.
Educator, author, and advocate Dr. Mitch Earlywine is here to tackle the burning issues.
And I'm here to clear up the myths about cannabis and burn them away with science.
CannabisRadio.com presents a no-holds-barred platform that seeks to redefine and revolutionize the entire scope of the cannabis culture while opening the door for more to join the cannabis crusade.
Dr. Kevin Hill.
You can't ignore the fact that, like alcohol, most people who use don't have a problem. So I think that you need to think about policy in that way while educating people properly about marijuana. I think that's the way to go.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 39 after the hour, and quick reminder that coming up at the top of this hour, we've got Stoner Jesus joining you from Stoner Heaven.
live on CannabisRadio.com every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right after this program. He'll save your stony soul, so be ready. 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. For this segment, I want to head back to the state of Arizona. Yesterday, we did a two-part rant on the talking points that are being fostered by the people against marijuana legalization in Arizona and being promulgated through the opposition arguments that will appear on the 2016 ballot. You know, whenever there's initiatives, there's the pro arguments and the con arguments. And we tore down some of the con arguments yesterday. And there are just so many. Even in a two-part rant, I wasn't able to get at all of them. So I wanted to cover just a few more. This comes from the statement of Ed Gogek, MD. He's been a guest on the show, author of Marijuana Debunked. And I'll put it all as one point here. He says, in Colorado, they entice kids with marijuana candies, cookies, and sodas. Just like big tobacco, the legal marijuana industry targets teenagers because with tobacco and marijuana, 90% of adult users start as teens. Denver pot stores aren't filled with green leafy weed. They're filled with THC-infused gummy bears, lollipops, and sweetened products called reefers, peanut butter cups, hashies, chocolate, and pot tarts. Google them. Okay, yeah, we could Google them, Ed, and what we'd find is that those were brand names that were in the Tainted Ink case from 2001 back in California. Nobody in Denver is selling reefers, peanut butter cups, and hashies, chocolate, and pot tarts. And as far as this idea that we are somehow marketing to kids because we're making infused candies and infused cookies and brownies and stuff, ignores the fact that according to the American Confectioners Association, 3 out of 4 gummy bears eaten in America are eaten by adults. See, I don't know where these people live that adults don't like cookies and candy and crackers and gummy bears and brownies. Have they been to Walmart? Have they seen the people? I mean, we are not a svelte people here in America. I'm one to talk, right? So this idea that making candies and cookies sold in a store that you have to show a 21 ID to get into is somehow marketing to children is just crazy. I mean, it's gotten so crazy now that Colorado banned any fruit or animal-shaped gummies. So you can have a gummy square. You can have a gummy circle. You can even make a gummy pyramid, I suppose. But you can't have a gummy-shaped bear. Like, it can't have a head and arms and legs. Can you have a gummy starfish? No, no gummy starfish. Right? But you could have a gummy star, couldn't you? This is just so silly how it's gone. This idea that somehow these tasty treats are being marketed to kids. It just ain't so. The effect, of course, that Gogek wants to scare us about, he says, as a result, Colorado now has the country's highest rate of teenage marijuana use, and the number of dogs and toddlers overdosing on pot has skyrocketed. Okay. We covered it yesterday in a number of these pieces that try to say that Colorado's got the highest teen use. It doesn't. Colorado's monthly teen use in the last survey was at 21.3. The national average is 21.7, so they can't possibly have the highest rate of teenage marijuana use. And to this issue about the dogs and toddlers overdosing on pot, no. What we can say accurately is the reports of people going in to emergency rooms and poison control centers because of marijuana is on the rise. The reporting is on the rise. See, when marijuana was illegal and your dog got into your stash, you didn't tell anybody about that. You didn't take the dog to the vet and say, hey, my dog got into my marijuana. You don't want to attract attention to the fact that you got marijuana. So we can't really tell how much it's gone up.
I am willing to concede it may have gone up some. There's more access to marijuana. But since marijuana is a non-toxic substance, and since marijuana overdoses can be easily mitigated through proper education, I don't see this as reason enough to continue locking people up in cages for their use, growing, and selling of marijuana. Remember that in any of these arguments, whenever you feel like you're getting stuck with these people, you can always follow up by saying, and so that's why we ought to keep locking up adults who buy, grow, and sell marijuana? Because that's what they're arguing for. Remember, they want to attack legalization as something bad. Pick holes in our arguments. Oh, you said this much tax revenue, but it's only that much tax revenue. Oh, you said the schools get money and they never did. Oh, you said the black market would go away and it never did. They'll make up straw men to battle and just keep bringing it back to, so that's why you think we ought to keep locking up people who use marijuana? Because that's what they're supporting. The other part that they get in here is, and let's go to, let's see if we can get someone different here to talk about. Okay, Richard H. Rutkowski, MD, from Fountain Hills, Arizona, complains that in the 1960s, marijuana contained 1% THC. In 2016, marijuana edibles contained from 30 to 70% THC. This is the old not-your-father's-woodstock weed argument. I think we debunked it on yesterday's show, so let me move on to another. They have the Bishops of Arizona Catholic Conference wants to let you know that studies have shown that adolescents who use marijuana have significant differences in brain structure and cognitive functioning compared to those who do not use marijuana and experience up to an 8-point drop in IQ. Folks, you're going to see that 8-point drop in IQ in so many of these anti-positions for the rest of the year. Let's take this one out to the woodshed. The 8-point IQ drop refers to a study, long-term cohort of people studied in Dunedin, New Zealand. And what's significant about this is they were able to track them at, you know, in their childhood, in their adolescence, up to their 30s. And they were able to track whether or not they used marijuana, how much they used marijuana, and came to some conclusions. And the one thing they found is that the ones who had used marijuana heavily as adolescents turned out to have 8 points, an average IQ 8 points lower than the rest of them. This was jumped on by Kevin Sabet and the anti-marijuana propagandists immediately. And the next thing you heard, bullet point, bumper sticker, time after time, was when teens smoke pot, they lose 8 points of IQ. This was their golden goose, man. This was just so a gift to them. The only problem with it was that a lot of people doubted that study. One of them was a researcher named Ole Rogeberg, who took the same data set and he applied some statistical analysis to it. Like, hey, did we think about factoring in how poor these people were or what opportunities they had and what areas they came from? Do we factor those kind of things in? And once he did that, he was able to find that the IQ drop was attributable not to the cannabis use, but to the fact that they came from a worse socioeconomic background. And it just so happens people in the lower socioeconomic background had more use of marijuana. And those findings were published in the same exact journal that had published the first 8-point IQ drop thing. And then those people went back and rebutted that, and it was a big argument. But basically what we came down to is that scientists looking at the same data could not come up with a reasonable conclusion as to whether or not cannabis smoking had led to these kids losing 8 points of IQ, supposedly. In the meantime, after that 2012 study, in the intervening years, there's been more studies. And most particularly, there was a study, I think it was Queen's College in London. I think it's somebody in London. The twin study, or was it Duke University plus University of London? Yeah, something like that. But anyways, the twin study. And what they did is they had 1,600 pair of identical twins, something like that, a huge number, whatever it was, of identical twins, where one twin was a pot smoker and the other twin was not a pot smoker. Like, how do you find these people, first of all? How does that happen? But anyway, they found them. And what they found is they couldn't tell much difference between the pot-smoking twin and the non-pot-smoking twin. Even after all the years of pot-smoking, they tended to test the same. There was no cognitive deficit for the people that smoked the pot. This is not to say that teenagers ought to get baked before they go to class. What it is to say is we ought not to be making public policy decisions for adults based on this scaremongering of what might happen to the kids, especially when it might only happen to the kids who use the most marijuana most often, right? That's the other thing too. These studies that purport some sort of drop are talking about these kids that were heavy users of marijuana that supposedly found the 8-point drop. What they never talked about in that study is they found the kids that were light to moderate users had a greater IQ by 2 or 3 points. But they never bring that part up, do they? So tear that one apart anytime you hear it, this 8-point IQ drop, this cognitive functioning. And the thing about difference in brain structure, that's where they're talking about scans, different brain scans. That's junk science. That's just colors on a screen. It's really a lot of junk. Other points in here, Smoth, Stone Mayhem on the freeways. We've got a bunch of others. Another one that's a concern for some of these people against the Arizona legalization are the protections that this initiative gives to people in the arena of employment. It actually forces employers to have to prove that you were impaired by your marijuana use if you test positive and they want to try to fire you or not hire you and so on. And of course, the employers are freaking out. Oh my God, we'll have pot smokers in the workplace, as if they don't now. This is something to beware. Arizona is going to be a really close initiative, like I said earlier in the show. And if something like blowing up drug testing at the workplace is enough to get voters to be against this thing, you have to ask whether or not it was worth putting it in the initiative. These are tough things to have to fight about. I mean, Washington State, they're still upset that they never put home grow in their initiative, and they still don't have it. But you always have to weigh it about, well, if we put this thing in, do we lose votes? I don't know. Arizona might not have been the place to put workplace protection into an initiative. All right, we're going to take a break, get the studio all cleaned up here for Stoner Jesus coming up at the top of the hour to save your stony soul from stoner heaven.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world.
We're just not sure about France.
CannabisRadio.com.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals, or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. Just a few seconds here to clean things up before Stoner Jesus comes up live at the top of the hour. You'll hear just a little bit of silence while we switch over from the Portland feed to the Stoner Heaven feed. You know how tough it is to get a Wi-Fi connection up in heaven. Coming up on the show, looking forward to some great stuff in the coming weeks. We got next Friday, Kim Prince will be joining us from the Southern California Cannabis Conference and Expo. That's happening the first week in August, while I will be in Portland for the Indo Expo. But big news from the Southern California Conference there in San Diego is that Whoopi Goldberg will be speaking at the conference. So I'm kind of bummed that I don't get to go. But Kim Prince will tell us all about it and tell you how you can get tickets, early bird specials, and more. That's all the time we got here from beautiful legal potland, Oregon. I'm Radical Russ. And that's it. That's all we got. Stoner Jesus is up next. Appreciate you being here. We love each and every one of you. Some of you more than others, but all of you at least a little. My thanks also to the Johns in the chat room. Not customers of Hooker's Johns. I mean, their names are John. Oh, I get silly at the end of the show sometimes. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.